ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರೇ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನ ಬಾಲಬ ಗಿರ್ವಾರೆ ಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನ ಬಾಲಬ ಗಿರ್ವಾರೆ ಹಾರಿ ಯಶೋರ ನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋರ ನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನ ಚಹರಿಯ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನ ಚಹರಿಯ ಜಯ ರಾಧಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರವ್ರಾಜ ಗಚರ ಸುತೇರ ಸರ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎ ಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಜಾಯ್ ಇಸ್ಕಾನ್ ಫೌಂಡರ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಜಾಯ್ ಸಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಕಿ ಜಾಯ್ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಸಮ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಸಮ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಸಮ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರಾಂಗ ನಮೋ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪರಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮಸ್ತಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿರಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ತಿನ್ನಮನೆ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಬಿಚರಣೆ ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಭಾಸ್ಕರ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ದ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ 3 ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 24 ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ 47 ಇಚ್ಛಾ ದ್ವೇಷ ನಹೀನೇನ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಸಮಚೇತಸಾ ಭಗವತ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯುಕ್ತೇನ ಪ್ರಾಪ್ತ ಭಗವತಿ ಗತಿ ಇಚ್ಛಾ ದ್ವೇಷ ವಿಹೀನೇನ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಸಮಚೇತಸಾ ಭಗವತ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯುಕ್ತೇನ ಪ್ರಾಪ್ತ ಭಗವತಿ ಗತಿ ಇಚ್ಛಾ ದ್ವೇಷ ವಿಹೀನೇನ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಸಮಚೇತಸಾ ಭಗವತ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯುಕ್ತೇನ ಪ್ರಾಪ್ತ ಭಗವತಿ ಗತಿ ಇಚ್ಛಾ ದ್ವೇಷ ವಿಹೀನೇನ Sarvatra Samachetasa Bhagavat Bhakti Yuktena Prapta Bhagavati Guti Vaishnavas Nishavahinena Sarvatra Samachetasa Bhagavat Bhakti Yuktena Prapta Bhagavati Guti Okay. Ichcha, desire, dvesha, and hatred. Vibhinena, freed from, sarvatra, everywhere, sama, equal, chetasa, with the mind, bhagavat, unto the personality of Godhead, bhakti yuktena, by discharging devotional service, prapta, was attained. Bhagavati Gati, the destination of the devotees, going back home, back to Godhead. Hi, Jai Bo. Okay, Bhagavati Gati. The translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Freed from all hatred and desire, Kardama Muni, being equal to everyone because of discharging uncontaminated devotional service, ultimately attained the path back to Godhead. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, only by devotional service can one understand that the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord, and after understanding him perfectly in his transcendental position, enter into the kingdom of God. The process entering into the kingdom of God is Tripad Bhuti Gati, or the path back home, back to Godhead, by which one can attain the ultimate goal of life. Kardama Muni, by his perfect devotional knowledge and service, achieved this ultimate goal, which is known as Bhagavati Gati. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 24th chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Renunciation of Kardama Muni. So last verse of the chapter, and I think we move on from Kardama Muni a little bit more into Kapiladeva and his teachings on devotional service in the next chapter. But some very important points in this purport. First of all, discusses how Kardama Muni was freed from duality, of desire and hatred, and also how he had equal vision for all living entities. And thus he achieved the ultimate goal of going back to Godhead. And, of course, an important point that Srila Prabhupada makes here is that devotional service is the only process by which one can obtain this ultimate goal. First thing, there's some interesting words in this verse and purport. The first words in the verse are Ichcha Dvesha, which, of course, is reminiscent of a Bhagavad Gita verse. All living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by the dualities arisen by desire and hate. So Bhagavad Gita 7:27 begins with the same words, ichcha dvesha, desire and hate. This is the difficulty for the living entity experiences. Also, Tripada Bhuti Gati, or the path back home, back to Godhead, is mentioned here. Tripad is, when we talk about going back to the spiritual world, Tripad Bhuti, often we heard the term Tripad Vibhuti and Ekapad Vibhuti, right? Describing the three-quarters portion of the spiritual world compared to the Ekapad Bhuti, one-quarter portion of Krishna's material energy. So that's what's being, that's, I think what this word, I don't know Sanskrit, but I think that's basically what this word means. Talking about tripad bhutigati, the path back home, back to Godhead. That's the spiritual world, is tripada bhuti. Okay, quote on that from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 2156. Because it consists of three-fourths of the Lord's energy, the spiritual world is called tripad bhuta. Being a manifestation of one-fourth of the Lord's energy, the material world is called ekapad. So there it is. And that verse is found in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. So Bhagavad Gita. Gati means ultimate goal. Sometimes it's defined as path or road, gati, like that. But I went through a bit of search on it in the Veda base, and most of the time Prabhupada translates gati as the goal, or the ultimate goal, the objective, like that. So this Bhagavad Gita is the ultimate goal. Now, Kardama Muni is on this path to reach the ultimate goal because he is freed from dualities of hate and illusion. And of course, at Bhagavad Gita 7:27 says, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by the dualities arisen by desire and hate. So hatred, Prabhupada says, arises from delusion and bewilderment. In other words, when one is an illusion means basically thinking that one's body. Identification with the material elements, the material body, not understanding one's spiritual nature. That's delusion and bewilderment of the living entity. And it is due to that bewilderment and delusion that these often negative emotions arise, such as hatred. Srila Prabhupada's purport for 7:27, the same verse. Prabhupada says, the real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. When one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by the illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifested in duality of desire and hate. So we hear this a lot, this term duality. And, of course, we understand duality means two different things that are opposite, like hot and cold, male and female, obviously here, attraction and aversion or hatred, those sort of things. So that's characteristic of the material world. And I used to think, well, why is that necessarily so characteristic of the material world? And in other words, isn't that sort of natural that we see opposites, that we see dualities, this is good, this is bad, this is hot, this is... The problem is it's all based upon material estimation or a material quality, because in the spiritual world, there is no such duality. In other words, there isn't really bad in the spiritual world. Everything is good. Everything is Krishna's energy. Of course, everything, even in the material world, is Krishna's energy. But Krishna's material energy is Vibhananda, his separated material energy, not the energy that he directly controls and not the energy by which he finds enjoyment. Krishna finds his enjoyment, we'll talk about that more later, in the spiritual energy, and therefore, when one is connected by in the spiritual energy from this knowledge of Krishna, then one is experiencing that happiness and bliss of spiritual life. And when one is separated, Prabhupada says, separated from that pure knowledge, then one becomes covered by the illusory energy and becomes controlled by these manifestations of the duality of desire and hate. So we want to avoid this hatred. It's really, really a negative thing. I was thinking about this, that sometimes all of us as devotees, sometimes we have strong feelings, we have strong emotions, and sometimes those emotions may even be directed towards other devotees, but we need to be very careful. I mean, first, of course, we don't want to cause offense to devotees. We know how that is very detrimental to the kripa of devotional service. And secondly, it's just illusory. Why do we experience hatred? Basically, envy of Krishna is the ultimate cause, although sometimes it's hard to see that connection. But ultimately, it is envy, because if we were seeing everything as Krishna and Krishna's energy, we wouldn't hate anything, because we see everything as part and parcel Krishna. Some parts and parcels of Krishna might be under illusion, you know? So we don't necessarily associate closely with people who are in the mode of ignorance or tigers or different, you know. We don't associate with all living entities equally. But at the same time, we shouldn't experience hatred for them. What I found as far as this sort of envy and dislike of people, one of the most important things is controlling the tongue. I just thought of that and hand wrote it here. I thought it said control fungus. Well, that's a good thing too, but no, control tongue is what I wrote here. Okay, that wasn't very funny. So anyway, by controlling the tongue, I find it's very, very helpful. I tend to be critical as much as any other devotee, fault-finding like that, but I have found in recent years, and I really pray to Krishna to help me with this, if I don't express it, it helps. Just, you don't have to say everything. Every little negative emotion that goes through our little brains does not have to come out of our mouth and sort of spoil the spiritual atmosphere. You know. So, in other words, try to control the tongue, especially in speech. Well, taking prasadam too, that helps. But and then what you find, at least I have found, that actually that negative emotion tends to dissipate. One doesn't feel that. And then the other thing is, anybody that I feel something negative about, I always try to think of something positive, right? You know, we don't have to like every devotee. We really don't have to personally like them, but we should respect them, we should honor them, you know, right? We should, you know, in other words, every devotee is very, very special, very dear to Krishna, very dear to Prabhupada or your spiritual master. And so, you know, all parts and parcels of Krishna. So actually, we should respect every living entity. What to speak of devotees is part and parcel of Krishna. And this in the material world, everyone is striving for what they want, striving for material desires, striving for, and to avoid what you don't want. I find as you get older that I don't desire so many things because it's hopeless anymore. I'll never be able to get them, you know. But what I find myself doing is avoiding, not so much going for pleasure, but avoiding pain. I do a lot of avoiding pain as you get older. Now, that's not a real elevated consciousness, to be honest with you. I mean, sometimes it seems necessary. But in other words, that's, again, duality. You know. So the real way that we avoid pain is, of course, by being spiritually situated, by realizing our relationship with Krishna. And even there, it's not that there won't be pain in the material world. It isn't that there won't be disappointment. There won't be so many things. They're there. But they're there for everyone. It's sort of the nature of the material world. It's part of the bad bargain of having a material body in this material world in Kali Yuga. It kind of all goes with the territory. So we have to learn, as we hear so often in the scriptures, to tolerate, to control the senses, control the tongue, and focus on Krishna, focus on our relationship with Krishna, and trying to just really work on that, develop that, make that our goal. And then the other is not so important. You know, we go through so many different things, so many experiences in life, and we have through many, many lifetimes for so many millions of years that we need to really focus on what is truly important. And that is what's being discussed here, the real constitutional position of the living entity, being connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in pure knowledge. And then we control the illusory energy rather than having it control us. Somehow this amused me. I remember when I was running a Gurukul in California, one of the expressions, I don't know, the kids must have come up with it, you know, because people are always, you know, people tended to preach to children. They're easy targets, you know. It's like we should be preaching to ourselves more, but, you know. Anyway, one of the things that the kids used to say is, you get what you get and you don't throw a fit, right? Words of wisdom, right, out of the mouths of children. I always like that, and I think of it myself because it's kind of like whatever Krishna gives us, that's what we're going to get. That's our quota. That's what's meant to be, and we don't, you know, it does no good to complain and moan and feel sorry for oneself or blame others on it. But if we accept and we think or try to think, what is Krishna teaching me? How is Krishna helping me to surrender? Often that's sometimes if we can't think of any good reason why it's happening, at least we know it's helping us to surrender to Krishna's will, Krishna's desire. And if we can do that, it's much, much less painful. It's much less difficult. And we can actually enjoy life even within this material world if we are experiencing Krishna within, or at least trying hard to experience Krishna within. And all devotees do. All devotees experience Krishna to some degree. I say this often, and I'll say it again. If you did not experience Krishna somewhat, you wouldn't be sitting in this room, I suspect. Right? Everybody, everyone, we all, and maybe in little ways, maybe in large ways, you know, significant, big revelations, or just like little, seems like Krishna's working here, you know, in so many ways, you know, Krishna's there. But we have to look for it too. We don't want to just go through life in a fog, but we always want to be open to Krishna, to Krishna's will, to being connected with Krishna. So here we have a great example of Kardama Muni, who is devoid of desire and hate. It's stated he has perfect knowledge, and through this knowledge, he understands his constitutional position to serve Krishna. So this word is given here as bhakti yutena, or pure devotional service. And he also had the quality of equal vision, sarvatra sama chetasa, and which is a very important quality for advanced devotees. And of course, 518, I'm just reading the purport. The verse is the humble sage, anyone? What's the verse? The humble sage sees with equal vision, you know, a dog eater, elephant. No way. Help me out here. I knew that. I was just testing you. Thank you. Prabhupada's purport. A Krishna-conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes. The Brahmin and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog or a cow or an elephant may be different from the point of view of species. But these differences are of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. This is due to the relationship to the Supreme, for the Supreme Lord, by his plenary portion as Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. So the devotee sees living entity and the pure soul, which is part and parcel of Krishna, it's a pure servant of Krishna ultimately, and also sees the presence of the Paramatma. So we see the pure soul, and well, we should, we're trying, striving to, the pure soul and Paramatma within the heart of every living entity. Therefore, that's Krishna consciousness. Now, one thing to be clear, though, is that this freedom from duality and equal vision does not bring about bhakti. It is not the cause of bhakti. One could be a great impersonalist yogi and be free from duality and have equal vision, understanding everything's spiritual. That's not necessarily cause bhakti, but rather, when one has bhakti, it brings about spiritual knowledge and spiritual vision and their vision of all living entities. So we want to focus on bhakti. I mean, we want to develop these good qualities, but they sort of come natural as part of becoming more advanced in Krishna consciousness and understanding Krishna. So, how do we get to this point? Srila Prabhupada quotes the Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't quote the verse, but the verse he's referring to in Bhagavad Gita. There's actually two, as you know, one in the 11th canto, one in the 11th chapter, one in the 18th chapter. It could be either one. 1154, my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. Great verse. And 1855, one can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So that's exactly what's being described in this verse and purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is much like the idea of Bhagavati Gati, the destination of the devotee of going back home, back to Godhead. So, and that all comes about from bhakti. And our perfect example here is Kardama Muni. And Through bhakti, he achieved everything. And as is described here in the end, he returned to the spiritual world. So Kardama Muni, probably if you think about the Bhagavatam, there's all kinds of different yogis and great, you know, sadhus. He's probably one of the greatest yogis, wouldn't you say? I mean, creating entire cities and mansions, you know, flying through the air. He's pretty good. I mean, you know, but that's not what he's famous for. That's what he's not what he's known for. That's not what he's being glorified here. He's being glorified as a great devotee. And because of his devotional service and his knowledge of Krishna and his sense control and all everything else, he is able to go back to Godhead and achieve the ultimate destination. And yeah, I think it's Vishnuvas Chakravarti Thakura in his purport to this particular verse. He says specifically, Kardama Muni achieved his original spiritual body in the spiritual world. Of course, we expect that. If he's going back to Godhead, that's what would happen. But just to put a fine point on it, yes. He's actually, whatever his spiritual position is in Krishna Loka, that's where he is now. Okay. So, bhakti is the path. We call the path, the process, the sadhana, the abhideya. So bhakti is the true abhideya. In the Bhakti Sandarbha, yes, Srila Jiva Goswami again, I'm sorry, I can't help it. Such wonderful, wonderful writings, Srila Jiva Goswami. He wrote, of course, the six Sandarbhas. And first of all, before he discusses the process of bhakti, he goes through the first four Sandarbhas of, you know, the Tattva Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, and Krishna Sandarbha. And in those four, that's Sambandha. He establishes a relationship. He establishes the truth. When you finish that, you know everything you need to know about who is Krishna. Then the fifth one is Bhakti Sandarbha, which is Abhideya, the process of devotional service. And then he finishes, of course, with Priti Sandarbha, which is Prayojana, the ultimate destination. So he's continually connecting us with the absolute truth. And we see throughout Bhagavad Gita, throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, this only service to Krishna or Vishnu is recommended. You know, that's we see that through verses like Yat Karoshi, Yat Ashnasi, Yat Juhosi, Dadasi, Yat Tapasya, Sikuntaya, Tat Kurusha Madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that as Senakunti as an offering to me. So what do we offer? We offer what we eat. We offer whatever it is. We offer on the altar. We try to make it as nice as we can, right? We have beautiful decorations. And, you know, I'm completely objective in this, but we actually have the most beautiful deities, you know, in the entire ISKCON world, just objectively, you know. And, you know, our pujaris decorate them so nicely every day. It's not like, you know, someday. No, every day is a festival. Flowers and outfits and jewelry and everything. Backdrops, I mean, you know, all the way through. And so is that what Krishna wants? Does Krishna like the more opulent we make it, the better he likes it? Not really. Although, when we try to give the most we can to Krishna, that shows what? Our love, right? Now, if you are King Yudhishthir, he does the Rajasuya sacrifice, right? Completely opulent. They had to go out, his brothers had to go throughout the country, throughout the kingdom, to collect all of this money and tribute to be able to put on this incredibly expensive, opulent Rajasuya sacrifice. And that sacrifice was for one purpose, to glorify Krishna. Makes that very clear. So if you have, you know, if you're completely rich, like King Yudhishthira, you should offer millions of dollars. You should offer everything. If you have nothing, very little, you offer a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water. With love and devotion, with bhakti. So, Krishna has everything. What can we give him? But, and he's self-satisfied. He is Atmarama. How can we give him anything? Because if we offer our love to Krishna, our bhakti, it's bhakti that pleases Krishna. He doesn't depend on or demand opulence. He's looking for love. This is from the Bhaktisiddhanta, verse 142. It is said in scriptures, the Lord is eternal and has unsurpassed bliss. Scripture also says that bhakti pleases the Lord. That is understood that the Lord is composed of the highest bliss, and he has a Sarup Shakti named Ladini, which gives bliss to himself and others, just as a light manifests itself as well as others. Its highest function is bhakti. So we know that there's three principal spiritual energies. The Ladini Shakti is ananda or bliss, right? Spiritual happiness. And Jiva Goswami says that highest bliss is bhakti. It's the highest, Ladini's highest, its highest purpose is bhakti. Bhagavan bestows the Shakti to his associates. That's us. So, believe it or not, yes, we are his associates. It remains there eternally. It's an eternal feature of the living entity. We always have bhakti within us. That's our nature. By relationship with that Shakti, the Lord is highly pleased. Bhakti, full of his Ladini Shakti, pleases the Lord, who is the form of joy or priti. So Krishna enjoys with his devotee, and he bestows his prema onto us for the mutual enjoyment of both the living entity and Krishna. You know, sometimes we might almost think, well, Krishna's out Maram, he doesn't really need any of this, but he's being nice, you know, letting us offer things, you know, and pat us on. No, Krishna's enjoying his relationships with devotees. I mean, when you read his pastimes in, you know, Bhagavad 10th canto, I mean, he's enjoying playing with the coward boys. He's enjoying being taken care of, you know, by Mother Yashoda. And he's enjoying his relationship with the gopis of, you know, the highest, you know, moods of love. So this is his nature, in fact. I said before that, you know, we hate to, it almost sounds mundane to say, what's Krishna's motivation? You know, how can we assign a motivation to God who is so far beyond our tiny little understanding? But if there was any motivation, we can understand, it's described by our sadhus and our acharyas. He's motivated by prema, and he wants to expand prema. So sometimes I'm thinking, why would he care about me? He's got, how many gopis does he have? Something like, different, you know, it depends on where you read it, 30 million, I don't know. I think Rupa Goswami says 30 million at one point. So what does Krishna need me for? Why does he even care? I'm just this stumbling along in the material world, you know, nonsense. Because it's his nature. He wants to always expand, and he has somehow or another the ability to have a relationship with every single one of us, every living entity throughout the whole universes. That is the wonder of Krishna, the amazing thing of Krishna. Because also, when you think about it, in one sense, we are all Krishna. We're all, I'm not being impersonal here, but right, we're all part and parcel of Krishna. We all come from him. It is his energy expanding, the jiva tattva. And so he knows every part of his universe. He knows every part of his expansion. When you think about it, you know, your little finger may not be very important. You don't really have to think about it a lot. But you know it's there, and you feel, right? I mean, it's, in other words, you are aware of it. Just as we're aware of every single thing in our body, Krishna is aware of every single aspect and part and parcel of the material and spiritual worlds, because that's who he is. This is the amazing, incredible nature of God, of Krishna. And even more amazing is what is his desire in that relationship. It's one of love. It's one of prema. So that is what Kardama Muni is looking for. That is what we should be looking for. Our acharyas and gurus have all been, you know, to obtain that loving relationship with Krishna. And it comes about when we actually give up all this stuff and the material energy and focus on Krishna and pleasing him. Jiva Goswami also says, The Lord is the cause of manifesting his bhakti shakti in the jiva. He is the cause of engaging their senses. The jiva isn't a boss or an assistant in this matter. The strong mercy of the Lord is the cause of devotees' attraction to the Lord. Now that's got to think about. That's one you have to, you know, hear a couple times and think about. He's saying by Krishna's mercy, not only do we know him, only by undivided devotional service can I be known as I am. To know Krishna, we need bhakti. But he's saying also by his mercy, we're attracted to him. He gives us knowledge, but also spiritual happiness. And he gives us his highest love of prema. Because we are part and parcel, and that's what he contains. He is filled with prema as his highest purpose, and therefore he infuses that into the living entity. And that spiritual happiness then can be experienced by his devotees. And not only by the pure devotees, such as Karma Muni. Sometimes we think, I'm so far from this. How can I ever experience these things? No. Interesting, in the 11th, Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, the Uddhava Gita, chapter 14 is particularly nice. I think it's a title, Devotional Service, something like that. A couple of verses from that I think are very hopeful. One is, this is 11:14:26. To the degree that the Atma becomes purified by hearing and chanting my glories, a person is able to perceive my real form and qualities and experience their sweetness. Just as the eyes, when smeared with special ointment, is able to see finer objects. So it's a matter of degree. In other words, it's not that we're just going to be floating around in Maya forever and one day all of a sudden, you know, big light, you know, fulgence come, you know, and all of a sudden I'm enlightened now. No, it'll come gradually, by degree. And we experience that the more, it says, we become purified. And purified means what? It means giving up material, right? Prabhupada says advancement means giving up the material and being attracted to Krishna, to the spiritual. So the more we become purified by hearing and chanting my glories, we will be able to perceive Krishna's real form, qualities, and experience a sweetness, which is the loving relationship between the devotees. Okay? And then one more hopeful verse from the 14th chapter, 11th canto, verse 18. What about, you know, if we just really are still struggling in this material world, we still have a lot of attractions, you know, a lot of anartas and all that. Krishna says, if my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires, but because of his generally strong bhakti, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. That's Krishna's promise. So what does that mean by generally strong bhakti? Well, one could analyze that many ways, but I think it's real simple. Strong bhakti means one's following the orders of the spiritual master, chanting 16 rounds, following the four good principles, right? I mean, that's not so easy in this age, you know. That's something to be commended, actually. So anyway, if one has strong bhakti, where that is one's intent, one wants to be Krishna conscious, even if one has some material desires, Krishna says one will not be defeated by sense gratification. Of course, that's not, as we say, not a license for sense gratification. We should be striving, of course, the best we can. But it's often more fruitful to take the positive rather than negative approach. The positive approach is become attached, attracted to Krishna. Hear about Krishna, chant. That's the process. Chant our rounds very carefully, you know, chant kirtan, hear the Bhagavatam. It's not a big mystery. Rupa Goswami gave us the basic principles. Prabhupada gave us the same principles of sadhana bhakti are there. And if we follow them sincerely, Krishna is there ready to help at all times. Okay. So thank you very much. Okay, for those of you who thought someone else was going to give class, I'm sorry, I'm sure you're disappointed, but, you know, we have to do what we have to do sometimes. Comments, questions, thoughts?
Just a curiosity. Is that the final destiny of Gautama Muni, to be parental relation with buoyant reverence, not sweet respect? He's God. He cannot love him on his left, like Nanda Maharaj does. He bow down. I'm just curious.
In full disclosure here, I don't have my glasses, I don't have my hearing aids, so I'm just like basically just blind here. You know? So you're going to have to speak loudly and clearly to me.
I'm saying, when we hear Bhagavatam,
yeah,
there is a majestic aspect and there's the sweet aspect.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So you gave both. So I'm just curious about Gautama Muni,
uh-huh,
who...
because Gautama Muni seemed like he was more attracted to the opulent feature.
Yes, he's bowing down. So, how do you bow down to your son?
Right, so he may go to Vaikuntha. Perhaps he worships Narayan.
Got it.
And maybe not. I don't know. But, you know, that seemed to be his more of his motive. And what Prangovan is saying is very true. We see both the, well, there's actually three features. You know, one is the... there's Odarya Bhavan, which is, of course, represented by Lord Chaitanya, which is his mercy. And then there's his Aishvarya, which is supreme control. Like, we worship Krishna on the altar in the Aishvarya mode as Lakshmi Narayan. I mean, we worship him as Krishna, but we dress them as opulently, right? More like that. And then, of course, there's the Madhurya mode, which is sweetness. Doesn't mean just mean conjugal relationship. It also means just sweetness. And that's represented by the devotees, usually in the higher rasas in Vrindavan. We see that mood of probably in Vatsalya, Sankhya, and Madhurya, in other words. And you don't really see them, you can, but I'd say that primarily you would see them in Vrindavan. I mean, that's where, you know, and I don't know what the question was, but it's an interesting topic.
Because I remember the pastime of Balaram, when he found out his brother was bound by the rope with the mortar.
Yeah.
So he was inquiring. And Krishna is a very expert player. He was like showing, oh no, I'm stuck, I cannot play. I'm just helpless brother. And Balaram said, who has done this? So somebody whispering to his ear, mother, my ear. So then he goes and give a whole lecture, Bhagavatam lecture. That, do you know who your son is? He's Supreme Absolute Truth. He, from him, unlimited universes come. Not only him, I'm also Supreme God. And if he tells me, I can destroy so many things. And Mother Yashoda saw Krishna made the deity room mess with breaking the pot. So she was cleaning. After hearing a few minutes, with the same dirty rag, she comes and said, one more word, I'll bind you to. Balaram's running. It's a very sweet aspect. So I'm just missing with Gautama Muni. Just curious.
Yeah, it's a very sweet passage. The interesting thing, too, is that I was reading this, and there's this little book. I can't even think of the name. It's by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. What is it?
Logu Bhagavatam.
Maybe. But it's one. It only has two chapters, and one chapter is describing about, you know, Krishna and his relationship. What is it, you know, what is he aware of? What is he thinking like this? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, it's not that Krishna is pretending to be a little boy. No. He is feeling that he is a little boy and he is a mother show. Now, does he actually kind of know that he's really God? Well, yeah, but he's not, you know, he's like pushes that aside. You know, it's this... In other words, it isn't, it's real. The relationships are real. Krishna is simultaneously experiencing himself as a little boy, as Radharani's lover, all of these things, and creating millions of universes, all simultaneously. And there's an explanation, and this is when I get stumped on a question, it's something you can always give an answer to. Two words, Achintya Shakti. The inconceivable nature and energy of the Lord. How does he do it? It's achinta. Inconceivable. Okay, anyone else? Over here, Ragatmaka? I think, I can't see, but yeah. Okay.
said that Krishna manages this material world through his energy. Then you were saying that he is very, like, we're conscious of our finger. So how is Krishna conscious of us?
How is he conscious of everything?
And us.
And us. And it's inconceivable. that's all I got.
I mean, is this his energy or is it directly? I mean, we pray to him regarding sometimes our circumstances or what. But is that like foolish or?
I would just think about another thing. I don't know if I'm directly answering what you're saying. Another thing that's kind of amazing about this relationship that we all have with Krishna, you know, it's Krishna within us, the super soul, Radha Krishna within, whichever, is that, what was I going to say? When the devotee experiences Krishna, then, you're not, the devotee's not thinking, well, Krishna's also with, you know, he's in 300 trillion other living entities right now, and he's just talking to them like he's talking to me, and it's no. The relationship is real and personal. And the devotee's not thinking, oh, well, he's really this and really that and really that. No, the devotee is absorbed in that rasa, in that mood. And that's wonderful. And sometimes it gets a little bit broken. You know, like sometimes it breaks through in Vrindavan where they sort of see that Krishna is like, seems like God. Remember, even in the Bhagavatam, all the coward men came to Nanda after they left Govardhan Hill and a couple other miraculous things, and said, we're really wondering about this little boy. What's going on here? And then Nanda Maharaj tells them about Gargamuni, what he said on his name-giving ceremony. And he said, your son will be like Narayan, or as good as Narayan. They go, oh, okay. So they all interpret that as he's empowered by Narayan. Not that he's Narayan. That he's empowered by, or and even if he is, Even if you say, well, he is God, you know what they'd say? That's really wonderful that my son is God. Or that's really wonderful that our lover is God. You know, it's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, well, probably gives an example. If your father was a Supreme Court justice, you know, and you're on his lap and everything, or you're a little bit older and says, you know, he's a Supreme Court justice. Oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. Dad's a Supreme Court justice. But mainly, he's my father, right? So in other words, the Aishwarya relationship is always secondary. And Krishna makes sure to protect that. Remember when he swallowed the forest fire after Kaliya? And it said he had them all close his eyes? Why? Why did he have the cowboys close their eyes while he swallowed the forest fire? Well, I think that's what you're saying is that it would break the mood. In other words, he didn't want to display too much, you know, so he balances it, you know. And then, in fact, you know, I mean, they even said, you know, the coward boys, how they are, they have no respect, you know. They say, I don't know if he's really lifting, go around the hill, you know, we're all helping, you know. And, you know, and Sridhar says, you know, well, I could have killed the demons too. Actually, some acharyas say Sridhar could have killed the demons. He's very powerful. His coward boyfriends are extremely powerful, but they don't display it. They let Krishna display and Balaram display it. Okay, anything else? Thank you so much for your kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.